This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The American wedding. Two souls joined in bliss to the cheers of happy friends and family. Only nowadays the Montagues and the Capulets battle over invitations and gifts. Juliet's day is complicated by her wedding planner and her 10 sorority sister bridesmaids. Romeo's bachelor party planning posse, Friar or possibly Rabbi Tuck, is on hand with vow-writing assistance. And if the young lovers have planned wisely, there's a doctor on hand to spike the proceedings with Xanax. It's enough to make you want to elope. Never fear, it's Thursday and time for Ask Amy. She does battle with bridezillas on the pages of her syndicated advice column, and Amy Dickinson joins us to sort out all your wedding woes. Later in the hour, while some brides are donating their dresses to charity, putting them into attics, or laying them to rest in consignment shops, others are simply trashing them. Plus the regional repercussions from the Palestinian split. But first, wedding season. If you're approaching or recovering from a wedding this summer, for richer or for poorer, tell us your experience. Our number is 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Amy Dickinson joins us, as she does every other Thursday. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune and joins us from our bureau in Chicago. Hey, Amy.
Hi, Neil. Boy, exhausting.
Exhausting. You know, I was saying that this is obviously the high season for weddings. I don't think there's a column you've ever written that didn't have one wedding question in there.
Right. I think of this as my busy season. Right. You know, I'm so ambivalent about these bridezillas and, you know, Frankengrooms, as I call them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they do keep me in business.
And as you get these letters, forgive me, in the days before you used to write a syndicated advice column, my rule of thumb was whoever wrote the letter was wrong.
Oh, if only I'd known that before I started the job 4 years ago. And here I sit pondering.
Yeah,
no,
all these weighing and, you know. It's simple.
Well, the thing is, people write in, my favorite letters are those which are requests for, they're kind of masked etiquette questions,
mm-hmm.
but really it's not about etiquette. They want to use etiquette as a way to basically bash somebody over the head with a chair.
Aha, usually somebody in their family.
Oh, yes.
Or maybe the other guy's family.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And these letters come thick and fast. There is offense taken at such seemingly small things.
Right. Well, one of my favorite letters was also one of the first letters I received when I started my column from the world's most amazing bridezilla.
Okay.
In fact, in my answer, I asked her to please, you know, stop stomping over small villages and breathing her mighty tongues of fire. She was fearsome. But you know what I loved about that was I answered her letter. I basically talked her off a cliff, and she got back to me.
Really?
That's very rare.
Yeah.
But she responded. She got back to me after her wedding, and bless her heart. She said, thank you so much. I didn't know I was on another planet. She was crazed over the idea that people might bring children to her wedding when she had specifically told everyone that there were no children at the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So she became convinced that one of her cousins was going to bring a child. And in my answer to her, I said, well, okay, what if that does happen? Are you going to stop in the middle of your vows and say, with this ring, I thee, who brought this child here? You know, things happen. People get drunk, people get sick, kids, you know, things happen at weddings and in life. And you can't guard against every eventuality, which unfortunately is what brides especially seem to want to do.
And their mothers. And let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Jonathan. Jonathan calling us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi.
Hi, Jonathan.
We're actually having a pretty good experience. We're a little bit older and we've been trying to plan our wedding ourselves, and it's going okay.
It's going okay? We is who?
Oh, me and my fiancé, Brooke.
And how soon is your wedding?
January of 2008.
Oh, so you're getting busy on ordering the flowers now.
Right. So they'll be dead in time.
I suspected that might be the case. Where are you? How far advanced is your planning for next January?
Oh, not too far. We've looked at a few locations. It's sort of hard because we're not really, like, wedding people
uh-huh.
want to have a wedding, you know.
And I understand your fiance is there in the truck with you.
Yes, but she's upset that I'm on the radio, so she won't.
See, your first fight. But you know what's nice?
Cute?
What's nice is that Jonathan is making the call. I love that. That means that he and his bride-to-be are planning this together. And though that can cause some rough moments as you go, I think it's so great because then when they have this wedding, it will be a gift. Here's how I think of it. As a gift from the couple to their friends and family. Do you think of that, Jonathan?
Well, sure, and that's kind of what we're envisioning is we just sort of want to have a very casual event. We're going to have a friend's band play, with a professional musician, of course, but in just like a, I don't know, like I said, it's a little bit different, too, because we're probably one of those newer power couples where it's like we've been together for a really long time, you know, and so it's not like it's not like a young wedding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. And can I ask a very personal question, but how are you financing it? Are you two paying for it together?
We don't know yet.
Okay. Oh, I love that. That's how I live my life.
Are you offering to?
I am. No, I ask because it's a newer trend, and it's something I've really been advocating in my column, is that couples finance their own weddings. I feel that forces couples to talk about money and to be responsible about the scale of the event that they're hosting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, I probably should run, though, because we're about to go meet with yet another caterer. So.
Well, go. What are you going to go for, do you think?
What do you mean, what are we going to go for?
What kind of food?
We want to do a Sunday brunch wedding, so we want to serve brunch food. We really like breakfast food. So.
All right.
We're kind of picturing, like, crepes and pancakes and stuff like that.
Go for the lox.
I love that. A bagel and a schmear.
Yeah.
He's on a schmear, too, as well. Exactly.
All right. Good luck, Jonathan.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Mundo. Mundo is with us from Sonoma, California. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yeah, that's correct.
Go ahead.
I'm getting married in the Sonoma-Napa area, and the thing that was initially the biggest difficulty for me to digest was just the actual price of obtaining a wedding site.
About a year in college, right?
So, yeah, at least. We called a couple places, and they said their wedding events start at $70,000. And
that's a very good college,
me?
Yes.
Oh, that's incredible. And so this is a non-church wedding, so you're looking at, like, hotels and B&Bs and things?
Well, actually, we decided on just doing it in the downtown plaza in downtown Sonoma because it's $35 to rent the amphitheater there.
Okay.
Awesome. That's a great idea.
That.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
But I think, the thing for me is just like, how did just normal everyday people get married in this area? That was just kind of, you know, just the catering and all that kind of stuff starts at like $10,000.
I think at those prices, they just fly everybody to Hawaii.
Something like that, right.
Well,
but,
you know,
the
average cost of a wedding is now up near, this is the average, mind you. This includes people who get married in church and have a little reception in the church hall. The average cost is around $30,000 now.
Holy smokes. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah, I think we're going to end up paying about $8,000-$9,000 for the whole thing. But we've been doing a lot of it ourselves, like bringing in friends to do the food and, you know, to plan the event, and we're trying to make it kid-friendly, so a friend of a friend is kind of setting up a play area for all the kids that are going to be there and that kind of thing. So, that's just been kind of the hardest thing is, like, in a very tony area like the Napa Valley or Sonoma Valley, you know, just trying to come up with a budget that's even somewhat reasonable, you know.
Hmm. Well, good luck, Mundo.
Okay, thank you very much.
So long. Thanks for the call. Hey,
you know, that sounds wonderful, and I love the fact that men are calling in, but it just shows you how much more involved men are lately.
And I was making a joke about brides and their mothers before, and, you know, it's clearly grooms and their fathers, too. People get so wrapped up in the creation of this day that they're willing to do things like spend $30,000.
Right. Well, I've come to think of it as, and especially in the letters that I received, which, after all, are from people who are having problems, we have to admit.
Yes.
It seems to be a matter of control. It becomes, because I've seen some very out-of-control grooms who basically want to control every aspect of this wedding. And it seems like everything down to the color of the boutonnieres. I mean, you hear about the brides who – there are brides who insist that all of their bridesmaids get their hair dyed to match.
Really?
They want all of their bridesmaids to be brunettes or blondes or whatever. And, you know, I hear from a ton of bridesmaids who have had it.
Mm-hmm. They have to buy these dresses.
Oh, they have to buy these dresses. Then they have to do what I've now come to think of most basic weddings as like festivals of me. That's what I call festivals of me. Because the bridesmaids are expected literally to act like attendants to a princess and throw parties for her and sort of be at her beck and call. And they spend hundreds of dollars on transportation, on throwing parties, on the clothes they're wearing, and on their grooming. It's incredible.
Hmm. How much of the letters you get, how much of them, a lot of them do involve money, but more of them seem to involve emotional manipulation of some sort or another.
Oh, I would say that even the ones that are about money aren't really about money. I would say that the majority of letters I get about weddings are about emotional, what you would call emotional manipulation. But it's masked in this whole, my father's mad because I want my stepfather to walk me down the aisle. Or my mother's upset because I don't want her husband, my stepfather, to wear a tuxedo along with all the rest of the wedding party. You know, it seems absurd, but mm-hmm. These are very upsetting issues for people.
On such a big day, because for one reason or another, this day has become more important than the marriage to some respects.
Well, and this is the thing I keep trying to emphasize, is if people would invest the kind of time in planning their marriage as they do in planning their wedding, we'd have a lot more healthy marriages. You know, before the show started, you ran a clip from someone from Modern Bride who talked about the celebrity weddings. That's what's causing a lot of this.
Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson with us from our bureau in Chicago. We're talking about summer weddings this time around, bridezillas and the dangers of the open bar. Got a summer wedding story? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. In a moment, a closer look at the out-of-control wedding industry. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A quick flip through the wedding announcement is in the paper. It tells you it's summer, and many of them are big, fancy affairs full of taffeta and tulips. What you don't see is everything that happened behind the scenes, and that's where Ask Amy comes in. This time of year, she gets letters asking for help with everything from future mothers-in-law to bridezillas and franken-grooms. Amy Dickinson is with us for our every other Thursday visit. Got a wedding coming up, or maybe if you're recovering from one, whether or not you were the person saying, I do, tell us how it went, and any tips for the rest of us. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. As we've heard, brides can be a special species. These creatures have been created, according to Rebecca Mead. Her book is called One Perfect Day, and she joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I know you've been listening to Ask Amy in our first segment. This stuff must sound familiar.
Oh, very. Yes, indeed.
Why is this happening? How are bridezillas and terrible grooms created?
Well, when I started to hear about the so-called bridezilla, who started to be talked about, you've got articles and books and TV shows, all started emerging in around 2000. And it seemed to me that when a caricature like that really grips the public imagination, as this one clearly did, I mean, everybody knew what was meant by a bridezilla.
Instantly, yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you sort of, when something like that happens, you have to ask yourself what bigger thing is going on. You know, I think it's more than just the antics of a handful of out-of-control brides. And what I think is happening, what I think the bridezilla caricature is pointing to, is a way in which the entire wedding business has gone out of control, and mm-hmm. that we all think of weddings, however much we might enjoy being at them. You know, very often you're at a wedding and you think, my goodness, all this for one day. You know, this is crazy. And so I think, in a way, to have the bridezilla caricature is a way to siphon off into a safe place all these feelings of anxiety we have about what the direction of weddings is and what the direction they're taking is. And so we don't need to sort of look so closely at what the problems might be with the entire way of American way of wedding.
Mm-hmm. And this, I know you suspect, is a product, in fact, of the American wedding industry.
Well, I think the wedding industry has a great deal to do with influencing the way couples get married these days. I think that it's a $161 billion industry. It's very powerful and very, very strong. And, you know, in days gone by, couples turned to authorities such as religious institutions or their families to tell them how they should go about planning a wedding or what a wedding should signify. These days, it's much more likely that the authority they'll turn to is the wedding industry, which is also the person who's selling them the stuff with which to do it. So inevitably, I think, there's an escalation of production values and emphasis on the wedding itself and the wedding planning process.
It's not even the production values. Sometimes traditions are created that are totally bogus.
Well, I think in my book, One Perfect Day, I write about something that I call the traditionalesque, which is things that sort of feel a bit traditional but aren't really traditional at all. I mean, the classic case of this is the diamond engagement ring, which was more or less invented by the De Beers company in the earlier part of the 20th century with their brilliant slogan, "A diamond is forever." Diamonds haven't been given for eternity as symbols of enduring love, but they were invented as a symbol of love. And now everybody thinks of a diamond ring as absolutely essential.
And this goes on and on and on as these, who is really in control, of these? We know that many, many couples get married in much smaller, more modest ceremonies where, of course, they're in control. But when you fall into the grips of the industry, you really do.
Well, I think the issue of control is a very interesting one because the industry couldn't be as successful as it is if it didn't play into the hopes and the dreams of the real hopes and real dreams of people. I think that there's an intersection of an industry's marketing and economic interests and a true desire on the part of American couples to get married in a way that feels significant and feels weighty. Mm-hmm. You know, weddings don't have the significance that they used to have. It used to be it was the occasion on which you became an adult. It was the occasion on which you left home. It was the occasion on which you started living with your spouse for the first time. It doesn't have any of those meanings for many people any longer. And so I think in a way the wedding itself has become bigger as the transition that it signifies has in some senses become smaller.
And Amy Dickinson, of course, there's an element of keeping up with the Joneses. If the Smiths had a fabulous wedding last summer, well, the Joneses must do even better this summer.
You know, while Rebecca was talking, I just had an epiphany. You know, I think some of it starts with the birthday party when you turn five and instead of having five kids over, you have this whole event with 20 children and it lasts a whole day. I think we're celebrating moments, as Rebecca says, that as they sort of decrease in significance in modern life, we're celebrating them more. Because some of these weddings remind me of sort of debutante events or sweet 16 parties. They have this atmosphere of, you know, celebration and femaleness. And, you know, Rebecca talks in her book about any bride should read this book because you see how manipulated you are by this industry, which creates these, you have to have a garter and the garter will come with a pillow. And then you have to buy all of these things. It's crazy.
I managed to get through my marriage without a garter. Somehow. I don't know. Stephanie writes from our blog, "I am just weeks away from my wedding. We decided to have a biggish wedding, 120 guests, because my fiance, the groom, wanted a wedding. I wanted to elope. I am so stressed and anxious. I've considered calling my doctor for some medicated help. Is this a legitimate means of surviving the wedding madness?" What do you think, Amy?
I would say, you know, two shots of Jack Daniels and a Xanax. No, no, I think that obviously you don't want to go. You're exchanging vows. You know, you should do that. There are two things you should do sober: heavy equipment and vows. And I think that you should definitely remain sober during this process, as challenging as it's going to be.
And that doesn't preclude the possibility of eloping at the last second anyway.
Well, as Rebecca will point out, the elopement business is big now, too.
Really?
Oh, yes, there's an entire elopement industry. I mean, it used to be that eloping meant escaping your disapproving family. And these days, people talk about eloping as a way of escaping having a wedding, having to get involved with the wedding industry. But if you go, I went to the island of Aruba to research the elopement industry. And there they have changed their marriage laws in order to make it easier for Americans to get married there because they realized there was a lot of money to be made on staging weddings. And so now one in three couples who get married in Aruba are American tourists.
Let's see if we could get another caller on the line. This is Rebecca. Rebecca's with us from San Francisco.
Hi. I was got married 3 years ago, and we were going to get married in San Francisco. And the cost of the wedding in San Francisco and the feeling that you needed all of these sort of accoutrements to get married in San Francisco and family and everything just got to be really overwhelming. So my husband and I, we went and got married in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. It was a week-long event with friends coming. We had ended up having 60 people because we had a list of about 200, but not everybody was going to go to Mexico. And it was the best time I ever had. We saved so much money. I mean, your dress changes because suddenly you can't wear the big, you know, the very fancy dress on the beach. So you have a much less expensive, more fun wedding. And I wept throughout my vows, and I can't think of a more intimate setting than, you know, my closest friends and family there. And I think it was just changing the expectation of where the setting was, changed the expectation of what we wanted for our wedding.
That's interesting.
I love that. It sounds lovely, really. And I wouldn't be surprised if one of the guests who couldn't make it to Mexico wrote me a letter saying how disappointed they were that you weren't able to fulfill their expectations for what you would do. This is one of the problems with having a wedding, is that you have all of these different, sometimes competing interests.
We did have to toss out a lot of other people's expectations, but we made that decision consciously because we decided that the only people who were really going to hold memories of this day and who it was most important to were the two of us. And we also really felt that most of the people who really felt it necessary to be a part of that day were going to be there, and they were going to make the effort. And it was true. And yes, there were people who I would have really loved to have had there who didn't make it as a result of our location change. But, it might have been the same in San Francisco. So,
If you'd waited till this summer, that backlog waiting for passports, you might have cut way back on that guest list.
Oh, I've had a passport since I was, an infant.
All right. Thanks very much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
So long. This is an email from Mary in Rochester, New York. Hundreds of couples have had to cancel their weddings this season due to Army and Marine extension of tours in Iraq. We spent a year planning a lovely wedding for my daughter and her fiancé, who is now postponed until December. Please ask Amy for suggestions on how to spend the no wedding day that's looming on our family's calendar.
Oh, I've received actually a lot of letters from service members' families. Some of them have to do with these couples who are deployed fairly suddenly and they decide to marry quickly, as I think they should, for all sorts of reasons. And then they're wondering if it's okay to have a wedding when they return. And of course, talk about a reason to celebrate. So this whole family is wondering how to spend this day without one of the couple is gone, I wonder.
I expect so, yes.
I would just have a really big picnic and spend the day in a way that's significant for your family as a family. And look forward to the time when you can get together again and have a wonderful celebration, because really talk about a great reason to pull your family together. That's one.
Right. And also talk about a great way to reflect upon what a wedding is really for. It's really about joining families and people unifying in that way, and not about the garters and the cushions and all the rest of it.
Let's get Michael on the line. Michael's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, thank you.
That's good. I used to own a wedding shop in Australia for about 3.5 years.
I'm sorry, your phone cut out. You used to own a what?
I used to own a wedding shop, a bridal business.
Uh-huh.
And I saw all manner of Godzilla and Frankengroom, as you guys put it. But my favorite story, I think, from the time has to have been a gal who said she was going to come in and pick up her wedding dress from the store on a weekend. But she turned up with six friends, the bridesmaids. And I think that's the situation that can be the worst. We kind of felt like we'd been assaulted by an army of critics. And it ended up being unbelievable. And finally, I offered the girl all the cash we had in the cash register to leave the store.
Did she take it?
She did. She took the money. She gave us back the dress, and she left the store and told us she'd never come back, which we were grateful for.
And that's why you used to own a bridal shop.
That's correct. That is correct. I would never go back into the business.
Though it must have, I assume in Australia, it's also lucrative.
It is very lucrative. It is very lucrative. My mother runs the business today and does very, very well out of it.
Mm-hmm. And as a former bridal shop owner, was there one item that you used to sell regularly or at least frequently, and you just shake your head and say, I can't believe they're buying that?
Yeah, the fluffy stuff, fluffy cushions, fluffy garters, things like that. I was too much of a numbers man. I couldn't really appreciate all that kind of stuff.
Rebecca Mead, it sounds as if he's been reading your book.
Well, I spent quite a lot of time going to bridal stores and speaking with bridal store owners. And one of the things I learned was about something called the Oh Mommy moment, which I'm sure he has experienced, even if he hadn't called it by that name, which is the moment when the bride is in the bridal store with her mother, shopping for the gown, sees herself reflected in the mirror in her beautiful bridal regalia and lays her hand on her chest and says, Oh Mommy, because that's where she looks like her vision of herself, her fantasy of herself. And that's the moment at which the bridal store retailer is supposed to say, you need a tiara with that, or how about we get you a pair of gloves? That's when they sell you all the rest of it.
I have to say, one other comment that I have is my wife today, who is a wonderful woman, had some time with me in the bridal shop. And I think because of that and that experience, our wedding was just wonderful and so, so easy.
Michael, congratulations and thanks very much.
Thank you.
We're talking with Rebecca Mead, staff writer for The New Yorker and author of One Perfect Day. Also, of course, with us, Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's a comment from our blog from Kara. I'm getting married on July 14th. Everyone, including my fiancé and me, seems to hate many of the traditional wedding components, so we planned a rather non-traditional event, abandoning everything from the bridal party to the pose pictures to the formal toast, and boy, did we hear complaints. The worst fiasco so far occurred when we decided to ask guests to make a donation to charity rather than give us a gift. It seems as though people regularly denounce weddings as grift, gift-grabbing events. It's even more annoying when the couple isn't registered. We quickly fixed that faux pas. We're now registered at two national chains. Complaints from the guests, Amy.
Constant complaints from the guests. And this woman is correct when she says that, I've heard from many couples who, like this couple, want their guests to donate to charity. And boy, these guests, it seems like they're the same people who complain that they have to give a gift and then they want it to be a certain kind of gift, and it's really the gift-giving aspects of weddings are very problematic for people because it starts at the shower. I have a friend who's getting married soon, and why she is having three showers, what's up with that? And some people will be invited to more than one shower, and then they go to the wedding, and it's too much.
Rebecca?
Well, the bridal magazines will encourage you to register. I attended a seminar for brides while I was researching the book that was held by Brides Magazine, and there was a panel with the editors of Brides Magazine who were telling the brides attending that you have to register. It's one of the most indispensable tools for your guests. And, they were saying you might think you don't want all that fine china and silver cutlery, but you do need it, so you must register for it. And of course, wedding registries are enormous business for department stores and specialty stores, for whom it's very important to get not just the 80 or whatever it is guests who are coming to the wedding to buy their gifts at the store, but also to secure the custom of the bride, who's a young, impressionable, and very, very good consumer at the beginning of her consuming life, hopefully to secure her loyalty for the rest of her life.
And, of course, there is repeat business in wedding planning these days.
That's correct. Well, there's the so-called encore bride, which is the second time around bride.
Right.
Sounds like an opportunity for an occasion for an ovation. But second weddings are no longer the modest events they used to be. They're sometimes bigger than the first. So.
Rebecca Mead, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Rebecca Mead, a staff writer for the New Yorker magazine and author of One Perfect Day. She joined us from our bureau in New York. And Amy Dickinson, are you planning to attend any weddings this summer?
Oh, I hope not.
Another joyous day. Amy, Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson joins us every other Thursday on Talk of the Nation. She was with us from our bureau in Chicago. Have a great couple of weeks, Amy.
Thanks, Neil.
Coming up, forget about wrapping that wedding dress in acid-free paper. It's becoming more popular to trash that gown after the wedding and make sure you get it on film. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And right now, what to do with that fancy dress after the wedding. Usually the gown that you agonized over and spent a fortune on goes into storage permanently. Mark Eric has a different idea. Once the I do's are done, he takes photos of brides trashing their dresses, wearing them in car washes, muddy swamps, all sorts of places you'd never think to wear a Vera Wang. You can see some of Mark's photos through a link at npr.org/blogofthenation. Mark Eric, when he's not trashing dresses, is a wedding photographer. He joins us now from his office in Alexandria, Louisiana. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil.
Brides spend a bundle on these dresses. Why should they trash them?
It's all about having fun, creative photography on their wedding day. And really, trash a dress is a buzzword. If you go to the site, you'll see there are tons of dresses that we're just trying to get brides out of the mind frame of don't get a spot on my dress on the wedding day. The wedding day is stressful enough. Have a little fun. Have creative photographs made. And if you really do want to trash it, I'm sure you can find a photographer that's more than willing to have some fun with you. But
so in when the photographs you take, the dress tends to survive more often than not?
Yes, sir. Definitely.
How did this get started?
This got started, it's been around for a while. Destination wedding photographers have been shooting day after our newlywed sessions on beaches of the couples rolling around in the sand. Pretty romantic shot in their wedding dress.
Burt Lancaster and Deborah Carr, I remember doing that, yes. They were married. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's been around for a while. Last year, the term trash dress really took off. A photographer by the name of John Michael Cooper in Las Vegas wrote an article about dress trashing. I was inspired by that. We created a blog, trashthedress.com, where photographers from all across the country, all across the world, really, submit to it. Some pictures are pretty shocking, brides in swamps or mud.
Uh-huh.
Most are pretty easy, just brides getting out of the norm. You know, our take on it is if it's a picture that'll make grandma gasp, then we consider the trash the dress. It's just getting away from stale traditional photography and having some fun on the wedding day.
When you're talking, presumably the most of the ones that you do are people you're shooting their wedding as well.
Most of them, yes.
Yeah. And do you approach them with the idea of an after-day shoot?
Yeah, we'll show on the site. Of course, we don't push it on anyone if it's something they're willing to do. I try to attract a bride that enjoys fun, creative photographs prior to signing any type of contract. I try to interview them as well as them interview me. We want to make sure we're a right fit for each other. Of course, I'm not going to push anyone to trash their dress, but I do let them know that my style is all about fun, creative shots. And really, that's the new trend in wedding photography, getting away from the stale traditionalist and just having fun with it.
And what's the one you've had the most fun with?
The most fun for me was probably my first one, and it was a very clean one, actually. It was in New York City. Couple just got married. Groom was checking into the Ritz-Carlton. The bride and I, my assistant, went out to a fountain near Battery Park, and she jumped in it, played around, and danced. When he came out of the Ritz-Carlton, he picked her up and carried her in, soaking wet. And of course, being the first one, I'm sure that has some special memories. But
yeah. That also sounds pretty romantic.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Have there been any that didn't work out so well?
Not that I know of. All of mine have been great. Last week, we had a media blitz with a lot of national media. We did some shoots for some national TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Some negative comments have come out of those. People think that we're just wasting money, throwing money down the drain.
Sure.
It's really not the case.
Or trivializing the occasion.
Exactly. But that's really not the case. We're just out to have fun. Most dresses are salvageable. We're not out to destroy wedding dresses. Rather, we're out to create some fantastic art for the brides.
Hmm. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. Carl is with us. Carl calling from Maumee, Ohio.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I've been married for almost 2 years. Me and my wife, her wedding dress came up in two parts. A corset top and then the main flowing train and stuff for the bottom. Well, she waited a year after we were married, went on a photo shoot because she used to be a model. Did the photo shoot, and then just for shits and giggles, oh, pardon my friend.
All right, let's try that again.
She went through and did the photo shoot, and then through partway through, she took part of the bottom off and did like a little flame job with an actual, not a blowtorch, but like a little butane lighter type thing. As the end of the train and the start of what she would call the ball and chain, and she kept the corset part as to go on for the rest of the photo shoot.
Sounds interesting. I'd like to see that.
That'd be interesting, Carl. Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks a lot. You guys have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get this is Steve on the line. Steve with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, sir. That's me.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
All right, just calling in 10. I was actually trying to get in about the first half of y'all, but we actually did have some interesting stuff going on with the dress on the little bit after the wedding. After the wedding has become a tradition with my friends where we all go out to some dirty little dive bar, pretty much the worst one that we can find in the town of the wedding. So we find this little bar. It's only actually ends up being about 10 feet from the hotel. We get out to the bar. My wife only actually wanted to be there for just a short little while. We ended up being there for about 2 hours or so. Having a good time. We get back to the hotel room afterwards and, you know, going to get her, you know, out of her dress, which she'd, you know, been sweating like crazy and all day. Get in there, and there's actually about 2 inches of black ring just gunk, you know, attached to the bottom of the dress all the way around it, which luckily, you know, they were able to get cleaned out of there and the dress is now preserved and beautiful. But we were amazed when we got back to the hotel room.
Yeah. I suspect you may have run into a few stains, Mark Eric.
Actually, no, they got absolutely everything out of it. The dress is beautiful, gorgeous now, completely preserved, and there's nothing wrong with it. But that night, man, we didn't think there was any way we were going to get that thing clean.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Steve.
Thank you, sir.
And dry cleaning, I suspect, is important in your business, Mark Eric.
It's been crazy. This past week, I've had 2 emails from some national cleaning organizations wanting to hook up with trash.
I see. If you could recommend them, maybe a testimonial.
Yeah, but, if I have a second, one of the funniest stories from last week, we did the bride in the swamp, which I see is featured on your website right now.
Yeah.
That dress rinsed clean right away. The only stain she had was from leaning up against a pine tree, and some of the sap got on the back of her dress. But after being in the murky bayous of Louisiana, the dress washed clean. They cut out some of the undernetting, and she's going to put it up to show future generations.
Mark Eric, thanks very much, and have a good time this busy part of the year for you.
Thank you, sir.
Mark Eric is a wedding photographer. He joined us from his office in Alexandria, Louisiana. And if you'd like to see the picture of that dress he mentioned, there's a link at npr.org/blogofthenation. When we return, we'll turn to the latest in the Middle East.